produced by Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller, and Jeffrey Crosselius. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 596. Stephen Lamb on his updated book, Yes, Every Album, Every Song.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 596 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a few minutes' time. You can always get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. Stephen Lamb joins us in a moment to talk about his updated comprehensive Yes book, as well as touching on Tales and Trevor Rabin, so stay tuned for that great conversation. We are entering another period of intense Yes activity this week, with the band preparing for its US tour, Trevor Rabin releasing singles from his forthcoming album Rio, and perhaps the most seismic happening of all, the 600th episode of the Yes Music Podcast. We have a rather special guest lined up to join us in our celebration, so it's bound to be one to remember. Mark and I are also planning a charity event to coincide with the milestone, and more information on that will be coming soon. Unless you're already a YMP patron, of course, in which case I've already let you into the secret. It pays to be a patron, as they say. On Facebook this past week, Doug Curran kept up his average number of posts with the following: the new vinyl release of Bruford's One of a Kind album, his first reactions to the metal reimagined Pink Floyd tribute, featuring Rick Wakeman and Jeff Downes, amongst many other icons. A two CD set he picked up called The Magic Roots of Yes, from the years 1963 to 1970. It includes some, but not all, the interesting items you might expect. The new Kurt Michaels album, Stones from the Garden, including Billy and Michael Sherwood. A Louder Sound article on the 10 most underrated albums by major prog bands. Yes is represented by Tormato. No, only joking. It's actually Drama. And the Prog Report post about the second Trevor Rabin single from Rio named Push. Jeffrey Mason also chimed in with the following: chances to win tickets to the classic Tales of Yes US tour for at least six, if not more, venues. A new interview with Steve Nardelli of The Sin, one of Chris Squire's first bands. A question from Forgotten Yesterdays about John Anderson's guitar playing live. Melody Maker from 1980, featuring Yes's antics in New York. MusicTech.com's article asking if the new Trevor Horn digital sound collection, Jupiter, is a knockout or a cop-out. A new interview with the guys from the Downs Braid Association, and details from Forgotten Yesterdays about the July 1967 International Love-In Festival at Alexandra Palace, with Tomorrow amongst other groups. Ron Palick, hope that's how you pronounce your name, Ron, spotted Chris Squire's You By My Side from Fish Out of Water on a Netflix drama. It was Good Girls. But the discussion also mentions various other TV and film appearances of Yes-related music and imagery. John Pickles posted his confirmation that the original cover of Relayer was matte and not the shiny gloss ones we know today. And Eric Haverman has been delving into the Yes album, and why not? Stephen Schinder over at Yes Shift has been speaking to John Anderson's 1,000 Hands producer Michael Franklin, who also produced albums for Rick Wakeman and Patrick Mraz. And Kurt Michaels himself also mentioned Billy Sherwood on his album Stones from the Garden. Hector Salvador Plaza posted another great live photo of John Anderson, and over on X, there was the usual fire hose of content, but thank you to Rachel Hadaway for a kind mention. And I realised I've been spamming the Prog Magazine X account with photos of Tormato. Who could have guessed? Anyway, many thanks to everyone who's been in contact in any way this week, including those who took the time to comment on last week's show notes: Jeffrey Grisellius, Dave Watkinson, Doug Curran, Paul Hales, Nicholas Moyart, and Rachel Hadaway.
This is Miguel Falcón at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
It's wonderful to welcome back Stephen Lamb from the amazingly prolific Sonic Bond Publishing. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, guys. How are you all doing?
Okay, thank you.
Oh, God, that sounded very American, didn't it? How are you all doing? Sorry. That's too many fine. American authors.
That's fine. And hello to Mark as well.
How are you doing? How's everybody today?
Hi, Mark.
All right, so I've already said, Stephen, that your publishing house, Sonic Bond Publishing, is amazingly prolific, and it certainly is. In the back of your newly updated book about Yes, which I've got here, Yes, Every Album, Every Song, is a list of the current titles that Sonic Bond has got. So what I'd like to know is, everyone listening to this episode, if they haven't been to Sonic Bond's website, why would they go? Why would they go if they were Yes fans or prog fans?
Oh, well, obviously we don't just do prog. No. We do all kinds of popular music. But obviously, given my own background and stuff, we've always specialised in prog. So the whole point, the company revolves around the series called On Track, which the Yes book is one of. And the whole reason I set up the company in the first place was actually to talk specifically about the music. So the books are analyses of a band's output, either time limited or across their whole career, which is what I've done with Yes. So Yes has always been one of our best-selling titles. I first published that book at the end of 2018.
Yes.
And alongside a few other, the other best-selling title is Genesis, but we've done many, many different books from different genres. So the whole point is to be written by enthusiasts across a wide range of sort of popular music styles as well.
That's right. But you also do you not, sort of specials? Dave Watkinson's remarkable book about the Warriors and John Anderson is published by you, and also On Screen series. So tell us about the On Screen series and also Dave's book.
Well, Dave's book was, in fact, there's occasionally we'll do a one-off. I'm a little bit careful about doing them, just because they suck in a huge amount of time and, to be honest, expense. But we've just done, for instance, we've just done the two most recent ones we've done. We did the autobiography of David Paton from Pilot and the Alan Parsons Project called Magic. And we've also just done a biography of the singer of the prog band Twelfth Night that's just available in hardback at the moment from Burning Shed.
Yeah.
And the Twelfth Night organisation. So the On Screens, I've stopped publishing.
Oh, right. Okay.
Only because when I first set up the company in 2018, the idea was we were going to do film and music.
Yeah.
But it became quite clear early on, within 6 months or so, that the film ones weren't going to do as well as the music ones.
Okay, so that's interesting.
I'm not closing door on it completely, but for the time being, we're sticking with music. I think that's our niche, that's what we've become known for. So,
and
yeah.
How many titles have you got at the moment?
I think we've just gone through 160.
Crikey. So anything you could possibly want to know about music from fans' perspective, then definitely get over there and learn everything you want to know.
If you want to buy them, they're all available from Burning Shed.
Yes.
But I have a copy of your book, obviously. And I've, of course, got a sneak peek at the latest revised version of it. And these kind of revisements are, I find, extremely interesting. One of my good friends is also an author, and he specializes more on the band Kiss, which I'm sure is very much important to people listening to this episode.
What a surprise.
but he does a bunch of different books about albums and specific albums. Like, he just released a book on The Elder, which is one of the Kiss records, and it's like 328 pages on one album.
Who would do that? How ridiculous.
Exactly. Nice. Yeah, that's craziness. But what I'm always wondering about is, what is your criteria for revising a version of your own book? And do you think that you'll revise it again once Yes do their next studio album?
Well, it being my company, it being my book, I've done little revisions along the way. So because the book sold very well, whenever I've had to reprint it, I've chucked in whatever current album is out. So in fact, the last reprint had the Quest in it.
Right.
So it's really where you draw the line. So this with the new book, this is an experiment. So I've given it a new ISBN, as if it were a new title, to see if that's a, if you then take what is a good stock selling item up to a new level again. So, and again, given that it's my book and my company, I can kind of do that quite easily. Mm. So I think inevitably what happens is a band releases a new album just as you're about to publish a book about them. And that has happened loads of times. And in fact, we're going through that now with Stephen Wilson, who thankfully is just about to drop his album. Yes. So we're going through it now with, Crowded House as well, who announced a new album. So we're holding back the book until it comes out.
Yes.
When a band releases a new album, we wouldn't necessarily revise it. Obviously, there's other considerations. We might have loads of stock for a start. So if a book's selling, you wouldn't destroy the stock just to include the new album. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, Mark, it varies. There is no specific criteria. It depends on all kinds of different factors, really.
Because the interesting thing is that you mentioned something that I was going to bring up as well, is that my friend Julian released that book, and he told me that no sooner did he release that book, he stumbled across a bunch of different bits of information that could have totally added another 100 pages to his book. Yeah. It's like, it's almost like, you know, if you really want to, you could keep finding new things to write about an artist probably until the end of time, if you really dug deep enough. Do you feel that's the same with Yes?
Yep. there's always new information. There's always a new perspective. I mean, one of the things that Kevin and I were talking about was the fact that I've just interviewed Trevor Rabin for Prog Magazine, and he's given, I'm not going to tell you what they are, but he's given me a couple of little bits of gold about 90125, which I'm holding back for a piece I'm about to do on 90125 for later on in the year. That it's not brand new stuff, but it's a slightly different perspective on a couple of bits of things that are, you know, what happens with Yes particularly, everybody says what they thought about what happened in a certain situation.
Yeah.
And they sometimes contradict, or you think if you take one little bit of what he said and combine it with the one other thing that the other person said, all of a sudden you've probably got the truth in there somewhere.
Yeah.
It's not that people are lying, they just got a different perspective on it. So Trevor came up with a couple of things and I went, oh, really? He specifically wanted to set the record straight about one particular thing. Even then, I'm not sure it contradicts the thing that the other person said. Sorry, I'm being very vague about that. if you actually piece everything together. So anyway, I forgot what question I was answering now, Mark. Sorry.
It was about the updates, wasn't it? Yeah.
The answer is very probably yes. Unfortunately, you know, we've lost Chris and we've lost Alan. Trevor actually dangled something about something that Alan White's got that we may never see the light of date because he's passed away. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to stop being vague now.
No, that's all right. You've done a fantastic job of promoting your Prog Magazine.
That wasn't the intention. I was actually more trying to answer the question.
Yes, I know.
It just became relevant, and we were going to talk about it anyway.
Yes, of course, of course. Yeah. Well, we'll come back to Trevor Rabin in a minute and talk about his new material. But so you've included From a Page, which wasn't in the version I've got of your book originally, The Quest, Mirror to the Sky. So I was interested in what your ideas are around the current state of the band. Of course, we've lost Alan now, as you've just said, after losing Chris so desperately early. But looking across those, and they are, you know, you can't compare From a Page with Mirror to the Sky. It's totally different stuff. But what do you think of the current state of the band?
It's pretty healthy. One of the things that interests me, you know, I always come up with a perspective on some things. Because of the current state of the band, the fact that there are no original members and Steve is the only sort of classic member, it occurs to me that next year, not only have you got the band about to go on tour, playing what they want to play on the next tour, having not obviously decided to do Relayer, which I won't revisit.
Yep.
You've now, next year, you will have Rick playing Yes material. Mm-hmm. You'll have Oliver playing Yes material that he's perfectly entitled to play, playing on From a Page. John's out there playing Yes material as well. All of a sudden, you've got all these different ex-members of the band playing Yes material with perfectly reasonable, perfectly good reasons to be to play that material when they might not have played it in the past.
Right.
In terms of the current band, the only thing I say that might annoy some people, not annoy people, this is, again, a different, slight different perspective, is that I prefer The Quest to the new album.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yes, I know you'd say that.
Come on, justify yourself.
Okay. So this is my justification. There's two bits of justification here. Well, first of all, music is completely subjective, isn't it? So it either moves you or it doesn't. And there's a couple of tracks on the Quest that actually particularly moved me, as opposed to me thinking, oh, that's good, or that's a nice bit of progressive rock. A Living Island was the track that I found very touching. Yeah. So I have a lot of affection for that. And I felt that the individual tracks, though the album's not quite as cohesive as the new album, I actually thought individually the material is actually a little bit stronger.
Fascinating. I was interested in reading the part of your book which deals with the song Mirror to the Sky, and I've sort of reveled in the different sections and so on, but I think you're slightly less convinced by the way those segments are scheduled or are put together.
Yes, that's right. And I think that's not just true of that track. I think some of it feels to me, I should say, and, you know, I totally get that everyone will think something, or a lot of people will think something different. Some of the sections don't feel like they work together. Whereas, you know, if you listen to, sorry to go back to classic, yes, if you listen to And You and I, for instance, that all works perfectly, you know, themes are restated and things like that at the right times. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the new album, I'm not entirely sure. Some of it feels like bits of stuff chucked together. Oh, that bit worked nicely there. Mm. In my opinion, don't forget.
No, absolutely.
I like the new album. I prefer the Quest slightly more. That's all I'm saying.
I find that interesting. I mean, I thought that the new album was just heads and tails better than the Quest. I mean, the Quest has, to me, the first couple of songs in the Quest caught my attention, and the rest of it I started to kind of like lose focus on it as it continued, whereas I found the complete opposite. It's the only song on Mirror to the Sky that I don't like is that Living Out Their Dreams, that fourth song. I always thought that was the oddball sticking out like a sore thumb song on that album, and the rest of it I thought was just fantastic. And don't forget, you're comparing You and I to, let's say, Mirror to the Sky, and where You and I, they were in together in the same room all the time doing stuff, whereas in this time period, they had a lot of, you know, things against them, where like the COVID situation, they had to be separated, only two people could be maybe together, and then they had to do a lot of things remotely, so it's kind of a different, you know, situation in songwriting as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it's just a matter of opinion, really. As I say, music is so subjective.
Yeah.
And it's about what moves you as well. So for instance, with the Quest, I loved Living Island, and that kind of might maybe skew my opinion in favour of the whole album a little bit. But who can say? I think if I were going to play one of the albums or other, I would probably pick the Quest Quest first, marginally.
I got a question I'm very interested in after looking through your fantastic book. Do you ever look back at your song comments and feel differently about a song now than you did back then? And do you think that you would you make that change in a revision in the future?
Yeah. In fact, I did a little bit. Not very much, actually. I thought I might do that a bit more when I went through. Because when I went back and revised the book, I looked at every single word, but I didn't necessarily change it, if you see what I mean. So I completely rewrote. I didn't completely rewrite the book from scratch. I had a version of it and I just amended it as I went on. Interestingly, I changed some of my views on Tales from Topographic Oceans a little tiny bit. I'm one of those people who thinks that it would have made a great single album.
Yes.
I'm in that camp. But having said that, I changed what I said about the remembering a little bit. And I think you are wrong. You are wrong, Mark. only in that there are lots of memorable parts of it. There are lots of singable parts to it. Right. It just meanders too much. Mm. So I actually said in the book, one of my alterations was that there are a couple of sections in there that are so good, it's a bit of a tragedy that they're surrounded by some stuff that just kind of meanders. Having said that, I totally get how people look at the whole album and think it's a masterwork. A friend of mine, Andy Tillerson, he played my festival last year and actually played a little bit of The Remembering. as part of a section of one of his band's songs.
Excellent.
And he, you know, this is the greatest album of all time, or pretty close to it as far as he's concerned. And I've always stood up for the Ancient a bit as well. Yeah.
Well, you're like me then, I guess that's...
Yeah. Well, I always try to find these parts that people are talking about and they're remembering, but I end up falling asleep before I get to them.
But having said that, I also think that that sides 1 and 4 are overlong. Everybody seems to think that Ritual is a masterwork, and I think that could lose 5 minutes quite easily as well.
Oh, no way.
There you go, you see. There you go.
We're never going to agree. But let me ask you this then about the Classic Tales of Yes tour, which is kicking off soon, and I'm sure the band members are all very busily preparing for that. Now, one of the rumours, and we sort of had it confirmed by Jeff Downes when we spoke to him recently, is that they will do something different with Tales from Topographic Oceans. So whether they're going to do it or not, would you, Stephen, like to hear a sort of medley of the good bits?
Yeah, maybe. I've seen bands do that before, particularly with long tracks, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We'll see what they do. I mean, you know, I didn't like what they did with On the Silent Wings of Freedom. The way that was rearranged live. So they may do it right, they may do it wrong. For me, anyway. I've always thought what I wouldn't mind seeing is, this is not, I'm not asking people to rush off and break copyrights all over the place. Those people that would like to see it cut up and some of the best bits put together, you know, do it then. Just do it. Don't release your version of it.
No, tell us, but do
it and go and tell us what you've done, so we can go and do it at home and see if it works.
Okay. Well, I said we were going to come back to Trevor Rabin, and let's do that now. So you've spoken at length recently to Trevor Rabin for your piece that you've done for Prog magazine.
Did I mention that? Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
So, what's your view of this album? Obviously, no spoilers, of course, but what do you think of this new album and the singles that people will have heard by now?
What we've heard so far are kind of very, very Trevor Rabin-y. So Big Mistake is one of those big Trevor Rabin melodic rock songs. But the album itself is going to shock some people, I think, because it's very, very varied. And in fact, there's an argument that might say it's too varied, because he's just chucked everything at it. So there's one song that I won't name at the moment, but I did mention it when I was talking to him, that has three distinct sections in about 5 minutes, and they're all from different genres, completely different genres. So Trevor himself, he said he wanted to do something in lots and lots of different styles, but based in what he actually referred to as a prog rock sort of package. I'm not sure I would necessarily agree with that, actually, but there's some very proggy bits in it. I think the ethos behind it, the tone of it, is very proggy, even if very few individual sections you'd call prog.
Right.
There's not much that sounds like Yes, I would say.
Okay.
It sounds like Trevor Rabin. But it's good, and it's a grower. It takes a long... Trevor said he wants people to listen to it at least 4 times.
Right, yeah.
Which I now have.
So, having heard Big Mistakes, I thought it was fantastic. Honestly, it's something that I've been longing for. I'm a huge fan of Can't Look Away. I always thought that when Trevor's allowed to do his sort of melodically, you know, strong material, I think that's where he's strongest. And quite frankly, I think when he does that kind of stuff, when he did it with Yes, it's what pretty much saved Yes, to be honest. Back then, when he added those kind of bits to it, I think people were a little, you know, kind of like with the prog thing at that point in 83. So I think when he added in his stuff into it, it kind of reawoken people and got them back into prog, because they intertwined it with his sort of melodic sensibilities. Now, the second song, that's the second single, I thought was really good as well. Very interesting videos for both of them, though, which was great. Seeing him play in that first one, all the instrumentation, which was something I'm really into. But if I may, having heard some of the other stuff as well, this is a record that I find that back around the time of, let's say, like Don't Look Away, or Can't Look Away, he would have never been able to release this record. just specifically on the fact of what you just said, because most record label heads back in the day were like, listen, what is this record? Is it a jazz record? Is it a rock record? Is it? They would have never allowed that sort of flirting with different genres all in one song or within the album, nevertheless, you know? So I think that we're in an interesting time musically. Will it help him with the record sales? I'm curious to see that, because I think that Trevor Rabin fans are expecting certain things, I find. You know what I mean? So will this be too much for Trevor Rabin fans? I'm curious.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting. I agree with all that, to be honest. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. I think he has been allowed, because he's releasing it on Inside Out as well, yeah, same label as Yes. He has been allowed basically to go off, you know, he's gone off and done whatever he wants to do. So whether people like it or not, we will see. I think people will admire the ambition. Whether everybody gets into the music is another issue, really.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sadly, we have to call that to a halt there. Stephen, you must come back very soon and talk some more. But just before we go, tell us again about the book, what it is, just a 1 minute resume of the book and where people can get it.
Okay. Well, it's called Yes, Every Album, Every Song, as it's always been called. We're calling this a revised edition. It is available from wherever you buy your books. It's not out in the USA until October, just because it needs to be loaded onto a boat and arrive in the USA. But it is out now from Burning Shed, signed copies from Burning Shed, but you know, wherever you buy books, Amazon and everywhere like that. And it is every album, song by song.
Brilliant.
Simple as that.
Okay, fantastic stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen, for coming and speaking to us again today.
That's all right. My pleasure, guys.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller, and Jeffrey Cresselius. And half the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Chris Bandini, David Hayden, John Thompson, Mark Baggs, John Cowan, John Parry, Dave Owen, Simon Barrow, Steve Scott, Terence Sadler, Steve Dill, Robert Naser, Fergus Cubbage, William Hayes, Jeff Bailey, Stephen Raw, Lobate Scarp, Jeffrey Mason, Dave Watkinson, Tim Stannard, Robert Vanderveer, Brian Sullivan, David Pannell, Jamie McQuinn, Miguel Falcao, Paul Tomei, Michael O'Connor, and Brian Harris. As I said at the top of the episode, they get to know things before everyone else. So if you'd like to join them in helping to keep the lights on here at YMP Towers, then please do head over to patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Look out for more details of our 600th episode. And thank you for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week. And in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via X, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.